Welcome to the Commercial Disco, a voyage of commercial discovery. The only show dedicated to exploring the commercialization of great ideas and research across deep tech and science, driven by the ambition of the people that make up Australia's unique innovation landscape. We talk to the greatest minds about what is influencing their work and their insights into the ingredients needed to bring great Australian innovation to life.
Hello, I'm James Riley. Welcome to the Commercial Disco. Today I'm talking to David Sandel. He's the Chief Executive Officer and Managing Director at CI ISAC Australia. Now, this is obviously a cybersecurity firm. CI ISAC stands for Critical Infrastructure Information Sharing and Analysis Center. Welcome, David.
Hi, James. Thanks for having me.
I'm going to get you to just talk through the formation of CI ISAC. You've obviously had a career in IT, lots of experience in London, I think, originally in the financial services sector, building products, running teams. You've had some public sector work. You've kind of moved into cybersecurity because it became a fundamental interest. CI ISAC, just tell us the genesis story.
Sure. So when I was running Intel for National Australia Bank, I had some dealings with the FS ISAC. So this is one of the original ISACs born out of the States back in 99, one of the bigger ISACs globally, really saw the value in how bringing together bits of information from across a number of people help you form that more complete picture of the actual threats that are out there. So that was the genesis of it. There were a couple of big incidents that we worked on. Collaborating with that ISAC was extremely beneficial. Having my own personal networks that I could tap into to, again, build out that picture. That was kind of the genesis of the value behind the information sharing side of things. So move on a couple of months, got together with one of my co-founders, Scott Flower, who used to run the APAC intelligence office for FS ISAC. So we had some dealings in previous roles. We started talking about how we could pull something together for Australia that would take the best elements of the ISAC model and effectively the missing pieces from the other sharing arrangements and forums and associations that were out there at the moment, with view to wrapping that around critical infrastructure. So that's very on vogue now. Mid last year, it was semi on vogue, but it wasn't quite as in the headlines. This was pre some of the big cyber incidents that we saw in Q3 and Q4 of last year. So we were talking about this a good few months before that. So fundamentally, we wanted to bring together industry in a safe, trusted environment to share information on cyber threats. So that's the headline. The reason that we wanted to do that is to help them work together to more effectively manage their cyber risk. So there's a lot of information out there. Lots of people will try and sell you threat intelligence. Every second cybersecurity product is going to be flogging threat intelligence effectively. You need to relate that to your own environment. So not every threat is something you need to worry about. The challenge that we saw and we've had reiterated over the last couple of months is a lot of critical infrastructure providers just don't have the resources to make sense of what's out there to do anything about it. So we wanted to pull together that information sharing element, but then really beef up the analysis center side of things, which is your central organizing functions that actually add value and context and make sense of the threats and get that out in a way that is usable by the broad membership. So that's kind of the origin, what we were trying to achieve in with the ISAC itself. But there's a couple more layers to that, which we can drop into, but fundamentally it's to help organizations become more proactive, manage their risk more effectively, and be more cyber resilient.
Okay, I'm going to drill down into that a little bit because it seems odd to me. I would have thought that that kind of function would generally come out of the public sector, would be a government role if you think in terms of the ASD and the ACSC and the cyber hubs and AusCert and all these sorts of things. So if you can talk through the commercial model of CI ISAC and then how that would differ from ACSC, government industry body, which is also all about information sharing.
Sure. So the way CI ISAC was incorporated, and this became evident pretty early on, is it needed to be a not-for-profit. So it exists for the members, by the members. Every member that comes on board owns an equal portion of it. We effectively incorporated that, but we are now custodians. There's a management board and all the associated governance. So it is a public company that has been incorporated. And the reason for that is you need something that is independent, it's a trusted environment, there's full traceability and transparency in how we operate and run that entity. If you want people to share their sensitive information on cyber threats, they need to have a lot of confidence in that ecosystem and how we handle and process that. In relation to the existing initiatives, CIOPSAC sits quite nicely in the middle of a couple of the main initiatives that are already out there. So this is one of the first challenges we had last year when we engaged the federal government. You guys are just another forum to confuse private sector. What are you doing? So the way we explain it is, if you think of the intelligence pyramid, you've got strategic intelligence at the top, there's the operational in the middle, and then there's the technical and tactical at the bottom. So how we relate to the ACSE as an example, there's the CTIS program, which is excellent. That's very much about machine-to-machine sharing of technical indicators. Big organizations share the information in, it gets processed and pushed out at machine speed. The challenge for a lot of critical infrastructure is they don't have the resources to actually effectively participate with that. They don't have threat intelligence platforms. They don't have the internal cyber resources. They can't make sense of the information. So if you're a bigger player, that's great. You can process and work with that. But if you're one of the many that is really struggling to even get their heads around the new legislation and comply with the basic security requirements, that's really a bridge too far at this stage that you can't participate with the technical sharing side of things. If you then roll up to the TISN initiative, which again is great, that's cross-sectoral, there's comm sector, transport, and all the rest of them.
That's the Trusted Information Sharing Network, that's run.
Yes.
Federal program.
Yes, out of home affairs, yeah. So those forums are more focused on strategy and legislation. So they're not really in that operational space. Again, there's really good representation from across industry, but we're not dealing with day-to-day operational outcomes. And we want to place ourselves squarely in the middle where we're informing and supporting and extending those existing initiatives, but we're actually hooking into industry to take in information on a daily basis, augment that, enrich it, and then push that out in a form that's usable so that members can actually uplift their cyber posture and make decisions around, is this an actual risk I need to do something about? So we're very squarely in the middle, but extending and supporting those other initiatives.
Do you have an industry focus? Is there a sectoral focus, or are you horizontal across everything? Is there any point these days in those kind of vertically focused cyber sharing networks?
So there's always going to be sector-specific threats. We are the strong belief that a lot of the threats, or the majority of the threats, are relevant across sector, which is why we created this entity to cover all 11 SOCI sectors. We also brought in local governments. That was an extension that we took the decision to bring in to cover government. That has now again extended to cover state and federal government because critical infrastructure lives within local government entities. The threats that we're seeing are relevant across sector. So one of the approaches that we're taking is to bring on those more mature players and help leverage their experience and knowledge and ability to share into the ecosystem to support the smaller members. And you really amplify that by having members from across sectors. And the threat intelligence sharing sessions that we run are incredibly powerful. You can almost see the light bulbs come on when the leads are talking from across sectors. And it's like, we're not in this alone. It's the same things that we're seeing across sectors. And cyber needs to be a team sport. At the moment, a lot of people are going at this alone, which is just not an effective way of tackling the challenge.
Okay, to give people an idea of precisely, you know, the nature of the beast here, just describe to me your typical member, if there is such a thing as a typical member. What kinds of organizations? How big are they? What do they do?
So I wouldn't say there's a typical member. I'd say the majority of our members at the moment are those more mature players. You've got your bigger energy providers, your transport providers. We've got a large telco, so I won't drop in specific names. We've got quite a few data processing and storage folks that are members. So again, quite mature. They run data centers, and a lot of the other critical infrastructure entities live within those verticals. So there's a lot of interdependencies here. And by targeting those more mature players, again, we can leverage their knowledge and experience to support some of those smaller players. And we have got a couple of really small members, so a couple of local councils. We've got a clean energy provider. And the reason that we've got members at both ends of the spectrum is we want to leverage the mature players, but we also want to test our products and ability to create value for those smaller players as we ramp up and scale the capabilities of the ISAC.
So in any information sharing network, you would have very sophisticated operations who are totally across all the cyber detail they need to be, and then perhaps smaller, less sophisticated players. In that information sharing network, how's the value exchange work? I mean, are there organizations that are just sucking the ISAC dry, or is there a you know, the value exchanges to bring up that the level of their own cyber defenses?
So the way we've addressed that is having a lot more focus on these central functions. In your traditional ISAC model, there's quite a lot of volume going through the ISAC. So if you look at an FS ISAC as an example, there's probably 80 to 100 alerts going out every day. So there's still quite a bit of work to do on the member side to actually make sense of, right, what do I need to take note of here? So there's an assumed ability to process and gain value from that, which is very similar to a number of commercial feeds. You get access to the data lake, the pool, the fire hose of badness, and you still need to make sense of that. What we do by having this National Intelligence Office and focusing on the quality versus quantity in our outputs is we do that filtering for them and we build context around the threats. And this is really one of the key differentiators besides the cross-sectoral focus is everything that comes out of the ISAC is effectively a finished intelligence product. So you've got your brief executive summary that can be made sense of by your startup CEO. Is this something I need to care about? There's the all-important context, which if you look at something like a vulnerability, is this being exploited? What are the specifics around proof of concept code or complexity to actually enact this vulnerability in an environment? And those help the members, even the less mature members, make a decision around, do we need to do something about this now? Then we put in a brief technical blurb, which is, how do you actually find if this is an issue in your environment? And then there's recommendations. So this, again, is something that doesn't traditionally exist in an ISAC type model. So it's easy to say, patch the vulnerability, great. But a lot of the time you've got operational technology, you can't bring systems down. So we'll always try and put in some compensating or mitigating recommendations or security controls. So could you block a specific port? Or could you put a detection in place to look for the activity or put some form of firewall in front of that? And by giving the members options, you buy them time to actually at least reduce the risk of the specific threat or vulnerability, but also put a plan in place to formally mitigate that down the line. And that's the way we effectively learn from the members, but also ensure that what is coming out the other side is usable and can be used to make decisions. And that's one of the key, I guess, tenets of good intelligence is the ability to inform decision making.
Right. I'm talking to David Sandel, the Chief Executive Managing Director of CI ISAC Australia, the Information Sharing and Analysis Centre. David, I can hear that you're clearly very passionate about this area. So CI ISAC has been going only a relatively short time. So the level of interest, I guess, I'm interested in hearing, and how busy have you been in relation to the actual threat landscape?
We've been pretty busy. It's grown exponentially, I would say. So there's two elements. I guess you'd love to hear about the members. So from a member perspective, we have representation across 7 of the 12 sectors that we cover. We've got the threat sharing forums that happen every 2 weeks where there's the formal two-way person-to-person exchange of these are the threats we're seeing, this is what we're doing about it. But there's also all the ad hoc sharing that goes along with that. We also have a number of MOUs in place, which help us tap into some of those other entities you described earlier. So AusCert, as an example, we have an MOU with them around information sharing. The idea being we pull information that they share with us in, and we apply that same intelligence lifecycle to build the context, get information out to our members. And conversely, if we see something in addition to what they've told us, we will share that back to them. So we're helping enrich their ecosystem, but also benefiting our members. We've also partnered with the AHEX ISAC, which is run out of Cordis, and that covers all the higher education institutions in Australia. Again, another great source of information on cyber threats, and there are some very specific threats to higher education that we're building more context on and helping to feed the rest of our members. In relation to the entity itself and who's involved, one of the things we did up front was spend a lot of time positioning, structuring, getting the right governance in place before we even turned the lights on. So the lights went on the 6th of February. That was when operational service commenced and we started onboarding members formally. We put the management board in place. We've got a number of strategic advisors that are helping us at the macro level to spread the message and help shape the strategy of the ISAC itself. But more importantly, within the actual operational functions, so the National Intelligence Office and member services being the two key ones, we've got close to 20 volunteers in total helping to deliver that operational service. So it's very much a case of dividing the load across. I mean, don't get me wrong, running an organization solely made out of volunteers is challenging in itself, but we do have a couple of full-time staff in each of those functions. We've got a member services lead who will be starting in the next week, and we have a full-time intel analyst in addition to all the volunteers. So we have some resource in those places, but fundamentally, we are delivering the service. We've had good engagement at the federal levels to, again, get everyone up to speed on how we can augment and enrich the existing initiatives.
I'm interested to know, I mean, I don't know whether you do this or not, but how you would rate the Australian kind of maturity level in relation to cyber. I mean, you've obviously spent a long career in London in the tech space. You've set this organization up as a founder because you've seen a gap, I'm presuming, like you've seen the need for it. So where are we at here when you kind of rate what we do here in Australia against what happens elsewhere?
Well, to be honest, there are a number of institutions and organizations in Australia that have some of the leading edge capabilities in the world. I've worked in a couple of the big four banks and been involved in some benchmarking by global leading cyber providers, and there is a lot of excellent capability. That said, there's an extremely long tail. There's a lot of entities that just don't have anything. They don't have the resources or the ability to understand what to do. And that's really the space that we want to be focusing in and why we've structured things in the way we have, where we can bring in those mature players and without too much additional overhead from their perspective by sharing in to this ecosystem. It might be a bit of a fluffy term, but it is more than technology and information. There's the whole capability piece, which we haven't really touched on, and that's what helps those smaller players. So if you think of something like an incident response plan or the ability to detect threats in an environment, if you have a really small player, they wouldn't even know where to start. But by leveraging those mature players and them having been through that whole process of defining what is a good incident response plan, what does a crisis response plan look like, you can then bring that into the ecosystem because it is not for profit. No one's got any commercial upside to this. There's no risk to anyone making money off this or losing out. We can then make that available to the smaller players who can customize that to their own needs. And it's effectively a step up to help them on that cyber journey. And as we mature and really get the information sharing working and humming, we'll be focusing more on the actual capability side of things, which is where the real value comes to those less mature players.
Well, I guess that long tail is the very large SME population that we have in this country. Quite a staggeringly large proportion of the economy is that SME component, small and medium-sized enterprises. So specifically, that's where you're targeting some of this, maybe the upper end of that SME cohort?
I mean, we don't discriminate. That's another, I guess, key differentiator. With a lot of ISACs, you've got tiers of membership. So if you're a tier one, you get all the services. If you're a tier five, you basically get to listen in to the calls and you might get a bit of information. We've got a fundamental principle that we will collectively work towards helping all of those small players. So we have committed to not leave anyone behind. That's one of our initial founding commitments with this whole ISAC. I fully appreciate the devil will be in the detail, but by getting this whole trusted environment in place, getting the bigger players involved up front and starting to build that repository of information that we can then use to support smaller players, but also ensuring the quality by these central functions means we've got a pretty good chance of having a lot of resources that can help them down the line. And I think this is one of the real things that needs to be amplified and focused on is we are trying to help people. This is a not-for-profit. We're doing this because we care about the mission and actually uplifting Australia's cyber defences. There is no commercial upside for anyone involved in this. We want to be building this ecosystem in a sustainable way. It's fully self-funded. It's growing organically. The membership fees that we charge people go into paying for the tech platforms and the people, and everything that goes into it is collectively owned by the members. So it is the optimal structure for this kind of uplifting initiative.
I'm going to finish up on this question. I'm just interested to know what the organisation looks like in the sort of medium to long term. Where do you go with an organization like this? Do you see your future attached to it, for example, in the long term, or are you going to set up and move on? What's it look like?
We're all committed to this for the long term. Yeah, look, the management board, the volunteers, we are all committed to building this for the long term. The organization itself externally won't change too much. I think we've done a pretty good job of designing it. We've built in a lot of forums and committees to get feedback from members. So the growth of the organization, again, is informed by the membership. We solicit feedback on what's working, what isn't working, and then that's what actually builds the roadmap of the organization itself. Phase 2/3 is to bring in managed service providers and MSSPs, those security providers. And the reason for that is those small players don't generally have their own IT functions and capabilities. So by tapping into those providers, we can then help all of their customers. That's a phase 2 piece we need to figure out in addition to the actual capabilities that we've been building to support all of those members.
All right, David Sandall, CIOSAC Australia CEO, thank you very much for joining us on the Commercial Disco. I hope you're busy, but not too busy, if you know what I mean.
Thanks, James. Thanks for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Commercial Disco podcast. Please like, subscribe, and leave a 5-star review wherever you heard us. And please visit our website, innovationoz.com, to check out our reporting on tech, innovation, and public policy. You can also follow us on social media to ask us any questions or to suggest a guest for the show. Until next time, this is the Commercial Disco wishing you a great week ahead.